Thank you, Garrett. My presentation today is going to be talking about incorporating primary phenotypic traits into a three-dimensional crop model. And I'm going to have three components. My co-authors, though, are Yuben Yang, who's a senior biosystems analyst with Texas A&M, and Omar Samante in the back of the room, who's a hybrid rice breeder. The three components, I'm first going to talk about phenotyping. This thing seems to want to jump, and I haven't touched it yet. So how do we move this backwards? The first part, we'll talk about phenotyping as a primary basis for our rice crop simulation modeling. Second part, we'll be talking about how we integrate architectural traits, three-dimensional traits, into our physiological models so that we can look at issues of interaction between different plant species and competition by different organs. Then I'll give a summary of the type of research we're doing today and what we propose to do in the near term. A major aspect of our rice research through the years has focused on phenotyping rice cultivars, partly with our plant breeding program, partly with our physiology program. To date, we've identified over 30 primary phenotypic traits, which are near invariant across environments for rather extreme levels of water and nitrogen stress. So if you grow the same genotype at different locations in different years, you'll find that most of these traits vary very little across these sites and years. And as an example, I've listed three primary phenotypic traits. The maximum rate of production of nodes or phytomeres on the plant, we found that those are very predictable except at extreme water and extreme nitrogen stress levels. In contrast, if you look at a secondary trait like the number of nodes or the rate, average rate of production of nodes, you'll see that that varies over time as the levels of carbohydrate and nitrogen stress changes as the crop grows. Another one might be the potential rate of leaf growth. That's nodally related, but it's very different from the secondary trait, which would be, say, average leaf size. So on and so forth, we've identified close to 40, actually, of these traits. The near invariance of these traits make them very suitable as structural components of physiological crop models. And what we did with our early rice modeling is we took roughly 85% of our earlier cotton and tomato modeling to use it to develop the structure of the rice modeling. So there's a lot of comparison or similarity in the physiology of different plant species, and we really don't have to develop a new model from scratch. The parameters for rice PSM, or PSM stands for population simulation model, were obtained from two sources. We reviewed approximately 250 publications on modeling and on crop physiology to derive a lot of the parameters, but some of the parameters we had to derive using very directed field experiments. The physiological processes in this model, which is our complex physiology model but no 3D architecture, are integrated via metabolic pools for carbohydrates and nitrogen, with metabolic allocation determined by age and structure-specific allocation priorities. Unlike some models, this does not have what you call absolute priority. It has relative priority. In a nutshell, what that means is, looking at some of the earlier models, when stress occurs, they'll often cut off growth to vegetative structure just like that. Well, in fact, if you look at the growth and development of most crops over time, you may see a sharp transition from a vegetative to a reproductive phase, but it's very, very rarely just like that. So this captures the dynamics of transition from vegetative to reproductive development very easily. We've validated, verified, calibrated, if you like, 17 sets of data, actually 17 genotypes of data, representing 8 years of data, where we explain anywhere from 85 to 95% of the biomass variability over time for each organ type, i.e. roots, stems, leaves, and fruiting body or grain, if you like. Now, in 2007, we began to ask questions about what is the physiological basis for hybrid versus inbred rice yield performance. Most of the rice grown in the United States is still inbreds, but about 25% is hybrids. 2007 marks the year where we started to see a transition towards an increased production of hybrid rice in the U.S. We use an open system chamber approach. Those towers are 3 meters tall, the lower left, and so we have the advantage over, say, cotton. My colleagues up at Lubbock have to deal with heat load much more than we do because water is a very, very good heat sink for moderating the buildup of heat in the chambers. And so what we do is we look at six to ten times during the course of the season. We do what I call a life table analysis. We destructively divide the plant into different tillers, different organ types, and record the masses. But we also, for 6 to 10 bouts during the course of the season, measure every 5 minutes for 72-hour bouts the canopy photosynthesis in the day or respiration at night. So we get good data on the CO2 gas exchange during the course of the season. Very, very quick nutshell of the results from one of our studies. We see that the photosynthetic rate at peak photosynthesis in the hybrids tends to be 21% higher on average than that of the inbreds. We see that the canopy of the hybrids, non-selected hybrids, intercept light 30% more efficiently than the inbreds early in the season. I'll get into why later on. We see a greater nitrogen uptake, an average of 6.3% higher nitrogen concentration in the leaf tissues, and because there's more leaf area, 11.7% greater nitrogen uptake on a mass basis compared on average to the inbreds. Finally, we see higher tillering rates, higher growth rates of leaves. We tend to see a more vigorous plant, and this results in a 37% average increase in mass for the hybrids compared to the inbreds, but there are exceptions. Some hybrids, inbreds perform as well as almost the best hybrids. So the genetic plasticity in rice affords the ability possibly to seek the traits that give hybrids higher yield and inbreds as well. Now this shows some of our data, focus on the top graph, and I apologize for the font size. What that represents is a leaf light extinction coefficient. So we partition the interception of light by leaves, by panicles, and by culms, or culms in the sheaths surrounding them. And you look at that top one, the highest value is 0.383 for the leaf level light extinction coefficient. The lowest value is 0.151. If we look at the lower right-hand side of this graph, you'll see some calculated light interception curves for leaves only. The lowest curve, if you look at the far right, an LAI of 6, it shows that if you have a light extinction coefficient for the leaves of 0.151, it's roughly going to intercept 60% of light and an LAI of 6. If you look at the top group of three lines that converge or look similar, one of those stands for a coefficient of 0.381, where the plant would be intercepting 91% of the light. So the architecture of the plant in terms of the tiller angles and the angles of the leaves have a profound effect on the ability of the plant to intercept light. This doesn't say anything about what they do with the light, but it does say the ability to intercept photons that enter the canopy. The second and third set of bar graphs, I won't go into detail, but those are stem and panicle light LECs, light, boy, my brain went dead. Anyway, the alpha values or K values for stems and for panicles. Now, in 2009, this result led us to ask the question, well, if we have such extreme differences in the canopy structure of different cultivars, we really need to begin to look at questions dealing with canopy structure. So in 2009, we initiated the development of a 3D rice model, which basically simulates each organ on each plant and the interaction of each organ within the plant and with neighboring plants. And the architectural component includes organ shape, position, and the hierarchical relationship in terms of vascular tissue and position of different organs to each other. This approach provides the ability to address these questions about competition, and also questions about light signaling. How does light signaling affect cytokine production? How does it affect tiller bud expansion or phytomere production? I'm going to try to demonstrate just an example of our plant model. Here we go. If I click the right button, it helps. Now, what this shows is the sun is rising in the west. In your right, and is setting on your left, which is to the west. And if you look, you'd obviously see the the shadowing, but more importantly, you see shadowing of organs affecting other organs that are less proximate to the incident radiation. So we're simulating, in this particular case, a photon flux density of 350,000 photons hitting that plant. And we're looking at the rate of diffuse radiation, the amount that's being absorbed, transmitted, or diffusively sent to other organs or back into the atmosphere. Collectively, on average, you see about 70% of the incident radiation being absorbed in the PAR range by the plant, with 30% or by the ground, or with 30% going back into the atmosphere. Now, I'm challenged with a PC, so let's see if I can get myself going here. Okay, one of the critical questions when dealing with a 3D plant model is a trade-off between computational time and accuracy. When we're dealing with a cohort-based, or some of you use individual-based models, you simulate a single plant or a cohort of plants that may be having age distribution in them, or maybe totally deterministic. But when you're dealing with a 3D model, you simulate one plant, it takes us 4 hours to simulate every hour of every day with the dynamics of photon flux densities hitting different parts of the plant and the growth and development of the different organs. If we do 9x9 plants, it takes 10 days. So there's a little bit of a trade-off compared to, say, Rice PSM, that takes 0.26 seconds to simulate every hour of every day for a season for a distributed maturation type model. So what we did is initiate some analyses to look at how many plants do we really need to simulate to accurately capture not only photon flux density, which will vary with plant, but also the growth and development of each organ on each plant. What this shows is if you go on your x-axis, this shows time shots through the growth and development of the crop. Pardon me. The very far left, your left, shows the plants that are 1 month old. If you look at, they're having an interception on the y-axis of 1. What the y-axis is the ratio of the photon flux density on the far left, the border plant, 1 border in, 2 borders in, 3 and 4 borders in from the center plant. And a value of 1 says that when the plants are fairly small, it really doesn't matter. You could simulate one plant or a million plants, and the photon flux density reaching each organ is quite accurately captured. But as the canopy begins to grow, let's look at the highest bar. It shows that the organs that are shaded, there's going to be a bias if you don't address the fact that border plants are going to have a higher light environment than plants that are internal to the border. This has some interesting implications in terms of plot size for field research. But be that as it may, this shows that you have about a 2.4-fold overestimate of photon flux density on that outer border. And then as you go in from the blue bar to the red bar to the green bar, it shows that your error decreases as you come in from the edge of the field, so to speak. If we look at nodal position on the plant, to the far right, you're talking about the higher nodes on the plant, average across time. The bars have them, and the very far right one is actually average for all samples, so ignore that one. It shows that higher on the plant, it really doesn't matter how many plants you simulate. But as you go lower on the plant, your errors with not taking into account the photon flux density problem with border plants can be very high, with a threefold error in overestimate of photon density. Okay. It also varies with the organ in a nutshell. organs that are high, like the panicle rachis, the vegetative part of the panicle, or the grain, they tend to be able to be estimated very accurately further out towards the border. But if you look at leaf sheaths, which are surrounding the culms, they're further down in the plant, you again can overestimate the photons that are reaching them each time. Okay. The 3D modeling approach provides opportunities to look at physiological processes in far greater depth. You can't do some of the same things that you can with a cohort-based model, at least in terms of the time constraint. We are looking and working with people to look at supercomputer clusters so that we can simulate things at maybe 1,000 or a million fold quite a greater speed, but we haven't made significant progress. Pardon me. Our ultimate goal in the short run is to begin to integrate strigalactone, cytokine, and auxin hormonal regulation as affected by potassium concentrations and carbohydrate and nitrogen stress. We feel that when we get at that level, we can begin to address some very fundamental issues involving phytomere production and tiller bud expansion that varies tremendously looking at different genotypes of rice. Thank you very much for the opportunity to give a presentation.